Your humble servant, John Bull. In whose menagerie is about to be set loose an animal of uncommon hue? Traveller to the Americas, the Indies and France, where he imbibes so revolutionary a draught as to turn his head, thus. His preference in victuals, conspiratorial cut, served with Robespierre sauce, pomme de terre infirma, and all manner of radical garnish. He swears a thimbleful of blood from the heart of a peer is preferable to carrot, a stream spouting from a minister's jugular tastier than the finest port, a glass brimming from the severed head of a Home Secretary the most excellent eau de vie. In short, he has scant respect for John Bull and all his family, and would overturn our entire menagerie for the sake of a square meal. His rancid scent of the charnel house, masquerading as munificent musk, the odour of true reform.
In 1774, a boy was born among the poor. He wanted more than his daily bread and ended up by losing his head. In 1778, human relations were ruled by fate. Some had a hatred, others from love. Most made it all upon heaven above. By 1781, the revolution had to come. By the same token of vision, no, the aristocrats had to go. By 1783, there was nothing in it for you or for me. The aristocrats dropped their flagons of wine and strutted around like silky swine. How good it was to be alive, but unless you were soft in the head, you realize
you were better off dead.
By 1787, we told them where to put their heaven. We wanted it not from death or from birth, we wanted it now, a heaven on earth. In 1789, the time had come to sip the wine. The streets of Paris with blood did run, the walls of the Vatican crumbling down.
In consequence of which, revolutionary fires were kindled throughout Europe and beyond. The people hailed a new age of liberality, escape from human bondage, a glorious dawn.
In 1793,
liberty!
Egality!
Egality!
Louis the 16th and his queen were embraced by Madame Guillotine.
Whereupon, among the upper orders, enthusiasm turned to distaste, a trembling lest the bloodbath spread, a fear of losing their heads. Thereafter, repression, war with Napoleon, during the course of which
the ports were full of assassins and spies, some of whom met with a sudden demise. One wanted to get back home if he could, when asked his name, said,
Thistlewood, your real name, Arthur Thistlewood,
the one you were born with.
What?
How many here in Le Havre do you think used their real names? All were known to them. There were spies for one side or the other.
At birth, I received my mother's name. My father refused his. Later, I chose my own and I've lived by it ever since.
Meaning?
What I say. Are you suggesting I'm less of a man for that?
What are you, then?
Simple. A citizen.
Of England?
Of the world.
But wanting to return there.
If you'll take me?
I don't know about that.
You've a vessel.
I'd be a poor captain without one.
Well, you'll be paid.
We're often searched leaving port. What's the reason for your return?
In the Luxembourg prison, I met a man whose sentiments I bear like a flame to those who've needed them.
His name?
Thomas Paine.
Good enough for me. Give me your hand.
You own land?
Only this boat.
Otherwise, you'd be bound by the laws of property, milked dry to feed the rich. Walk across a field, you commit a trespass. Pluck a berry, you're thieving. I tell you, liberty cannot prevail till the system of private tenure be abolished.
You have none yourself?
My wife had a property 16 months after our marriage. She died, taking it with her. It had been a life interest.
And Thomas Paine?
Is an apostle of reason and progress who's gone through the Constitution like a farmer with an axe, felling trees. There they lie. Our rulers may try standing them on end, but they'll never again make them grow.
Fine doctrine.
I carry his torch, that the English may make men of themselves.
Upon which we return to Merry England, where men at last are learning the necessity of putting the houses of the poor in order. The scene, a village near Manchester. On the platform, Samuel Bamford, handloom weaver, poet and diarist, with his wife Jemima. The speaker, one of radicalism's loveliest lilies of the field, orator Henry Hunt.
Will the Parliament give the labouring man a cow or a pig? Will it put bread and cheese into his satchel instead of infernal cold potatoes? Will it put a Sunday coat upon his back instead of leaving him to stand shivering and unshaven, his carcass half covered with a ragged smock frock with a filthy cotton shirt beneath it, as yellow as a kite's foot? Will parliamentary reform put an end to the harnessing of men and women to draw carts like beasts of burden, and the practice of putting labourers up to auction like Negroes in Carolina? Will it put an end to a system which has caused the honest labourer to be fed worse than the felons in the jails? Will parliamentary reform put an end to the beastly practice of separating men from their wives and committing to the hired overseer the bestial superintendence of their persons day and night? The enemies of reform jeeringly ask whether reform would do all these things for us. And I answer distinctly that it would do them all.
I take it that we are agreed on that.
We are agreed on much more. That man has no property in man. That the real strength and resources of any country must spring from the labour of its people.
Certainly. Without the journeyman and labourer, the country would be a wilderness.
It is a wilderness.
Yet suppress your indignation until we have considered the cause of our misery.
We know the cause. The rise in the price of wheat. The taxes that we're compelled to pay, which redistribute the wealth upwards. The support of the army.
I'd have thought that was self-evident.
What's your remedy, then?
The remedy, as I have attempted to make clear, consists wholly and solely in the reform of Parliament.
Wholly, but not solely.
We must tackle first things first.
A reform in the Commons or People's House of Parliament, as shall give to every payer of direct taxes a vote at elections, and cause the members to be elected annually. This must be done, and can be done only by a reformed Parliament.
In token of our appreciation to Mr. Hunt for travelling some considerable distance to address us, let us pledge him our support. Let us use every exertion in country and other meetings and in all ways that are warranted to induce the House of Commons to give this subject early and serious deliberation. And to restore to this country her real constitution and ancient laws. It is our future determination and resolution to confine our exertions strictly to procuring a reform in the representation of the people.
Thank you. Thank you.
I declare this meeting adjourned.
Mrs. Bamford, your arm.
Hunt! Let me through! Hunt!
Thank you, Mr. Hunt. That was an excellent speech. It's the first time my husband has permitted me to attend one of these meetings. I must say I enjoyed it. I hope it bears fruit.
Hunt! Damn you!
I'm afraid you're too late. The meeting is closed.
Come along, dear.
Hunt! Oh. You haven't answered my question. Hunt! Damn you!
You're wasting your breath.
Who says so?
I do.
Why?
Hunt only listens to the sound of his own voice. That or his fellow farmers.
I come of farming stock.
Gentlemen farmers?
Do you think I'm no gentleman?
I'd rather a man than a gentleman. Any day of the week.
It gives me little satisfaction.
Being a man?
A representation of the people.
You don't want that.
I want more. Much more. What to me is a stepping stone they treat as an end in itself.
I want more, too.
They water down their policies for fear of being apprehended.
What would you have?
The new world must regenerate the old. These are peacocks, preening themselves. What do they know the peasantry bowed down and beaten to the ground? Do they not realize this nation's an orgy of stables, parasites in need of cleansing and revolution?
Where did you come by these grand thoughts?
In the Americas? In France?
What else did you learn there?
How to lock limbs and step over gouts of blood.
What do you want?
What?
What are you looking for?
I'm looking for...
Hmm?
Strong men prepared to take the law into their own hands.
Perhaps I can help you.
You?
You've heard of Watson.
Who's he?
A follower of Thomas Spence. My father was a colleague of Spence in Newcastle.
A school teacher.
And a pamphleteer. He worked with Carlyle, too. Till jail broke his health, but never his spirit. The officers in the Bridewell smashed three of his ribs by making him run the gauntlet for refusing to pay tap money. Soon after, he died of jail fever.
Where do I find this Watson?
Time enough.
The sooner the better.
Seem determined.
With my blood up.
You realize there may be danger.
There's bound to be danger. So long as they call us the populace, the rabble, the swinish multitude. So long as the people's interests are in the hands of Hunt and Bamford, they are not of the people.
To prove a Home Secretary as rotten as eggs, or the most rotten borough, let us turn to that gentleman of breeding who first saw light of day as Henry Addington, subsequently became Prime Minister, was put out to grass, made a Viscount as a sop, and returned to occupy the Home Office at the time of these events. He imitates all sounds, viz. He bleats like a lamb, roars like a tiger, and brays inimitably like an ass. Pray attention for Britain's Guardian Gander. With a mouth like a sieve and a hiss like a snake. The one and only Viscount Signal!
It was on a dreary night of November that I beheld the accomplishment of my toils, the miserable monster whom I had created. He held up the curtain of the bed, and his eyes, if eyes they may be called, were fixed on me. His jaws opened and he muttered some inarticulate sounds, while a grin wrinkled his cheeks. One hand was stretched out, seemingly to detain me, but I escaped and rushed downstairs.
Reading, I see.
Yes, Mr. Secretary. What do you want?
Blood, Minister.
I beg your pardon?
Blood.
How extraordinary.
Not a holocaust. Just enough to make an example. It is time we stopped feeling squeamish about those radicals and acted. Especially now that they seem to be coming nearer home.
Yes.
One can never feel that the king is secure upon his throne till he has dared to spill traitor's blood. Lord Liverpool.
Would you like me to sign these?
No hurry. Reading, are you?
I may as well get them over with. What are they?
Routine, most of them. I added a few amendments to that one. Gave it, how can I put it, a touch more backbone.
Yes, I see.
Well, if you care to...
I thought there was no hurry.
There. And there.
But this could sign away a man's life.
Only if he deserves it. Thank you, Minister.
Look, here's a mistake. This one is dated the 23rd.
Well?
This is only the 21st.
That's correct. We're waiting for a reply to a previous one. It is due tomorrow, so that reply goes off the following morning.
Well, how do you know the reply will...
Don't worry, Minister. It will. Thank you.
Well, there you are. Lord Liverpool, you say?
Yes, over the execution of Marshal Ney.
Really? Did you think we might work it into a speech one of these days?
What a splendid idea.
You think so? Good.
Is that all, Minister?
Well, yes, I think so. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister.
Where was I now? I took refuge in the courtyard belonging to the house I inhabited, where I remained during the rest of the night, walking up and down in the greatest agitation, listening attentively, catching and fearing each sound as if it were to announce the approach of the demoniacal corpse to which I had so miserably given life.
I've wasted so many years.
Wasted?
Abroad. I was a lieutenant in the militia from 21.
You were pressed?
No, I went freely. But transferred to a marching regiment and spent some months in the Indies. There, I resigned my commission and sailed for America. From there to Paris. Home again.
Home?
Lincolnshire.
Whereabouts?
Parish of Morton le Fen near Horncastle. I was to be trained as a land surveyor. See, that didn't last.
Have you family still there?
Cousins only. One of them was, while I was away, badgered out of the house because it's not to be a burden on a parish. What about you? When did you come here?
When I was 12. Spence and my father left Newcastle at the same time to avoid the authorities.
Your mother?
She never had good health. Afterwards, I stayed on here. I'd no call to go back to the northeast.
What did you do?
Some of my father's friends helped me out.
You never married?
No. And you?
She died.
I'm sorry.
Don't be. It was better for her that way.
And now?
Now? I live off my property.
Property?
Yeah. Came to me not from kindness or charity, but because it was mine by right. And my father did all in his power to prevent it. My mother was his housekeeper. Name was Burnett.
I thought you didn't believe in private property.
I bled no one to possess it like the church. You don't expect me to throw it away. In any case, it isn't much. It's just enough to...
To keep body and soul together.
Or to keep a wife on. If she had me.
To be a country drudge?
No. The land was exchanged for an annuity. We'd just be able to live on the interest.
We?
She?
So, Arthur Thistlewood and his new spouse, Susan Wilkinson, leave for London. Finding lodgings in the East End, they keep body and soul together. And Thistlewood makes the acquaintance of Dr. James Watson, leading luminary of the Spencean philanthropist, pamphleteer prolific in his own right. Somewhat short in stature, perhaps, but amply compensating in vigour and alacrity of spirit. To wit...
We have borne things patiently until now. We dare do so no longer.
Yes.
Throughout the land, the numerical majority are unjustly oppressed, everywhere trampled upon by governments with no redress against the pecuniary profit of the ruling classes.
It's our duty to destroy these classes.
Exactly, but how? Now, this pamphlet lays out our principal objects. It recommends the extermination of royalty, nobility and property for the purpose of an equal division of the profits of the land. Let this be the basis for our new republic.
How can this be achieved without insurrection?
Through the dissatisfaction of the people. Certainly not the ability of the upper orders to see reason.
They'll never see reason. They defy reason.
Hunt still argues that the power of the majority is effective only so far as it is used defensively, not offensively.
We have remained defensive long enough.
Too long.
Right. The expropriation of all land is our first principle.
Yes.
Will Hunt come in with us?
What the hell with Hunt?
He'd be afraid to, for fear his top hat gets spattered. He's a general who leads from the rear.
We could swing him over for the sake of his following.
Bread makers who feather their own nests.
We have no need of him, but one day he will have need of us. We have a temple of liberty to build. We are the unfeed advocates of the disinherited seed of Adam.
He cops a fine dash in his white topper.
6 foot of flatulence.
He can hold an assembly in the palm of his hand.
Why should that be his prerogative?
That's what I keep telling him.
He calls the meetings, doesn't he?
Why should he call a tune? Listen to this. A meeting will be held at Spa Fields on Monday next to take into consideration the speediest mode of obtaining radical reform in the Houses of Parliament, being fully convinced that nothing less can remove the evils under which the people of this country have so long and do still groan. Chunt, Esquire, in the chair.
We must break it up.
Just like that?
Take over the platform.
How?
We throw them off it, if need be. Bamford's no great weight for a start.
Why don't you simply get there early and address the crowd on your own behalf?
She's right. Make your speech before Hunt gets there.
But the crowd won't be there either.
That's where you're wrong. They turn up hours ahead to hear him. Only this time, they'll be all yours.
We'll prepare a speech between us that'll set the country on fire.
With Henry Hunt, we'll go, we'll go. With Henry Hunt, we'll go. We'll raise the cap of liberty in spite of laying low. With Henry Hunt, we'll go, we'll go. The truth is we shall know. We'll plant the
of liberty and watch it, Francesco. I keep advising my countrymen to have nothing to do with these secret cabals and political clubs, but to trust to individual exertions and open meetings like this one. We go about the country, and they undo what we achieve.
Oh, I wish these right-of-ways were better cared for.
We're lucky compared to Cartwright.
Why, where's he?
Scotland
Yard. Help him. Oh, they seem to have gone to earth up there since that fella Muir was banished to Botany Bay.
Good God.
What's up?
But there's somebody already on the platform addressing the crowd.
4 millions in distress. 500,000 in splendid luxury. The climax of misery is complete! In the past 12 months, wages in the mills have dropped from 50 to 12 shillings a week and are likely to fall further. How can a working man survive such conditions? How can he hope to support a wife and children when one half of his income must go on bread? The poor of this country are starving to death. They are dropping like flies, unable to pay even for their own burial. The streets of our towns and villages are littered with the diseased and the destitute. The town of London has become a rat-infested bolt-hole for vagrant labourers and soldiers home from France. We must fight to better their state. We must become the restorers of society, lest England become a Robinson Crusoe, cast out and alone among nations unable to support her own.
Let me speak, Watson.
There's long since been a revolution in France. It has been said in some quarters that the deeds done then were barbarous. How much more barbarous over the centuries have been those acts committed in the name of the law?
What's happening? Who is it?
Thistlewood. That's who it is. Thistlewood.
Oh, he tried to interrupt our last meeting.
Well, he succeeded this time.
That damn clown.
Listen to him. He's whipping up the crowd.
Can we not stop him before it's too late?
It's too late already.
And allow the new freedom to ripen. the old world may be regenerated by the new.
Hey!
Thomas Paine!
Hey!
Thomas Paine wrote, "It was not against Louis XVI, but against the despotic principles of government that the nation revolted. The monarch and monarchy were distinct and separate things, and it was against the latter that the revolution was carried." We have at our head an even more profligate monarch, plus a pig's bladder of a prince that care nothing for the frenzy and starvation of the poor. It's their overthrow we demand.
Hey! Hey!
To accomplish this, we will have to take to arms.
Hey!
Preceded by hundreds of girls in white dresses, we must occupy the tower and barricade the bridges, blow up the prison doors, and see those lofty bastilles reduced to ashes. We must take what is ours. With this and the atrocious Titmouth in mind, I say, support our movement. Support our cause. Liberté! Fraternité!
Liberté!
Fraternité!
What was your intention in calling the meeting?
I didn't call any meeting.
Who did?
How would I know?
Mr. Hunt has already admitted to doing so.
And why ask me?
Mr. Hunt said he intended a peaceable meeting, which you disrupted.
Oh?
He said that when his party arrived, you were already addressing, or rather, haranguing the meeting.
Told you what I said and all, did he?
Is it true that you advocated insurrection?
Well, I knew I was being overheard.
Surely a circumstance common to those who address large crowds.
It's a crowd peppered with your informers.
Mr. Thistlewood, so crude. The wants of the belly creates a fever in the brain. Does that strike you as familiar? Or we must take the tower, the palace, the bastions, blah, blah, blah.
What?
Blah, blah, blah.
I'm under no obligation to answer your childish questions.
You might be more civil if you knew how close you are to a charge of high treason.
Nothing will frighten me, coming from you or your spooky master, Sidmouth.
What is the Tricolored Committee?
Never heard of it.
Where does it meet?
I don't know.
Who is its leader? Dr. Watson? Hunt? I see no reason why you should protect him. He was less scrupulous where you were concerned.
I don't believe you. Where Hunt was standing, he was too far away to hear a word, I said.
Yes, that is true.
What are you going to do about it?
Nothing.
Then what am I here for?
I don't know.
You mean I can go?
You let him go?
Yes, Minister. To keep an eye on him.
Why not incarcerate him?
In the hope he may lead us to bigger fish. I prepared your speech. Would you care to...
Oh, thank you. There are traitorous movements afoot to overthrow by means of insurrection, established government, constitution and ancient laws. Land awaits signal to fly to arms. Run all constables through? No Castlereagh? No Sidmouth? Good blessings. For the pretense of parliamentary reform, like certain venomous reptiles in dark alleys and holes, ready to creep forth, such horrid insignia as the black flag, bloody dagger, nothing short of bloody revolution, hence the suspension of habeas corpus. Admirable. Should go down well in the House.
You think so?
I may change the odd word. Here and there.
So one chapter closes, and we move on to the next, in which our elegant acquaintance, Orator Hunt, escorted by the ever-admiring Bamfords, sets in motion these events, leading to one of the most colourful assemblies ever to have been held on British soil.
many of our support, explain the failure of our movement till now simply in terms of a monstrous accession of wickedness on the part of the King's ministers.
You think there's another reason? Sugar?
There has been too much disruption. Thank you. Now, what we must do is impress the government with organization. We must indicate the mass of public opinion in our favor, but do it in a way which is consistent with our peaceful aims.
At the same time, indicating that it is a national effort.
And drawing attention to the scandalous number of people who still have no voice in Parliament. We must hold a demonstration. Not like Spa Fields, where speakers inflamed the crowd and riots ensued, but in an orderly fashion. An assembly so vast its opinion cannot be ignored.
Where would you propose to hold such a meeting?
The one place which seems ideal is St. Peter's Field in Manchester. It's close to the centre of the town and would hold a huge throng. Manchester itself has no representative. Our meeting must demand the election of one, by common consent.
I can arrange for a bill to be put in the Observer, and one in the Gazette, and tell the Boroughreeve and constables in advance so that everything is approved by law.
But to elect a representative in this way is surely against the law.
Our task is to show them we wish to preserve the law, that we do not align ourselves with those who break machines, with Ned Ludd and his lads, but to create a new order, consonant with the society which must decide for better or worse, to live with and develop the machine.
May not the sheer size of the meeting at St. Peter's Field give cause for alarm?
Dear madam, we shall be in beautiful array.
We're low, we're low, we're very, very low, as low can be. The rich are high, for we make them so, and a miserable lot are we, and a miserable lot are we. We're low, mere rabble we know, but out of our plastic power, the mould at the lordling's feet will grow into palace and church and car. Then prostrate all in the rich man's hall and cringe at the rich man's door. We're not too low to build the wall, but too low to tread the floor.
They say this Manchester meeting could prove the turning point.
Who say? Hunt supporters? Who only want to see their man in Parliament?
It will be a mighty display of opinion.
So? Castlereagh will take himself to a whorehouse and Sidmouth to Broadstairs for the weekend and know nothing and care nothing about it.
In which case, we must take the matters into our own hands.
Do you know, the week after being released from custody, Hunt was received in some village in Lancashire on a carpet of flowers. And at Manchester Sunday School, the monitors wear locket portraits of him round their necks in place of crucifixes.
Oh, stop going on about Hunt.
It's you that's going to hear him.
Not to hear him. To see for myself what support he gets.
We can't afford to align ourselves with the moderates.
At least I'm doing something.
All you're doing is looking for excuses for not carrying on where Spa Fields left off.
What have you done?
Give us time.
Time for what?
Put our plans into action.
What plans? Some harum-scarum scheme to blow up Hunt or the Regent?
So that's it. Our views are too extreme for you. You're afraid to come in with us after all.
What I doubt isn't your sincerity or the validity of your views, but your ability to put your schemes, whatever they are, into practice, to actually carry them out. Effectively.
So, you've turned against us.
I didn't say that.
Those who are not for us must be against us.
We'll succeed without you.
We'll come up with something.
For your sakes, I hope so.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Must have known we'd get nowhere with him. Oh, hell!
What now?
I cut my finger! That's what's so bloody funny!
Hunt was
would say, how can a man who can't chop wood hope to take over the country? No wonder he believes in the vote.
How many of his supporters have the sense to exercise it properly, do you think?
Which is why there's no alternative for the likes of us but to hasten the process.
You heard Watson.
Forget Watson. We don't need him any more than Hunt. Mind you, he's right in one thing.
Right.
You're always talking of hastening the process, but you never seem to get round to it.
You can chop these, you bloody son.
Have food to stew.
We'll make the most of it. You won't have it much longer.
Now what?
Forget it.
What?
It regards the annuity, the purchaser of the estate as...
Well?
It's gone bankrupt.
Which means?
We've no money. No income.
How?
I only heard this morning the purchaser wasn't insured.
So?
It's worthless.
What?
That's what I said.
Isn't there any possibility?
By God, if I had him here...
Go after him.
He could be abroad for all I know.
How are we going to manage?
We'll manage all right. I've had an empty belly before, you know.
So have I. I'm sorry.
I'm the one who should be sorry.
It's not your fault.
These things are never anyone's fault. Oliver the spy gave up 3 men to the gallows. Was he brought to book? No. Although they were drawn and quartered in front of their loved ones. We're time and time again we're made to take it lying down. Sometimes I'm afraid of the force of my feelings.
You should make more of them than you do.
We're low, we're low, we're very, very low. And when the trumpets ring, the thrust of a poor man's arm will go through the heart of the proudest king. We're low, we're low, our place we know. We're only the rank and file. We're not too low to kill the foe, but too low to share a spoil.
I have just received a report from the Manchester authorities. May I read it to you, Minister? As at present advised, we do not think of preventing the meeting, yet all accounts tend to show that the worst possible spirit pervades the country. I hope peace may be preserved, but under all circumstances it is scarcely possible to expect it, and in short, in this respect, we are in a state of painful uncertainty. Well, Minister?
Well, I shall depart for my favourite resort of Broadstairs this evening. You may convey my intention to the Cabinet.
That is all?
For the time being, I think.
As you wish, Minister.
It is in this situation that I still find myself, helpless and at the mercy of the fiend for which I am myself responsible. I beg you to come and give me what help may be possible. Your affectionate and afflicted friend, Victor Frankenstein.
So we leave Sidmouth, with his crocodile jaw, his taste for comfits, and his clandestine copy of Frankenstein. Meanwhile, Orator Hunt, given to believe that Thistlewood has gone to ground, places, as a token of amity, a sprig of laurel in his white top hat, in preparation for what looks like proving, when all's said and done, the most numerous meeting that ever took place in Great Britain. St. Peter's Field lies between Mount Street and Peter Street near the centre of Manchester. On the morning of Monday, 16th of August, 1819, the sky is a cloudless blue, the air warm. The streets are jammed with the gaiety and discipline of oncoming processions, the green itself already overflowing with thousands of men and women, many with children. Each minute, fresh contingents arrive, bearing banners of silk, some pure white, others with gold lettering on blue, one emblazoned with clasped hands and a heart. By contrast, a black flag, an honor staff, a handsome cap of crimson velvet with a tuft of laurel, the cap braided with the one word, Libertas. Contingents from Stockport and Oldham, from Collyhurst and Saddleworth and Moseley, from Cheshire and the Pennine Way, from Rochdale and Rhodes and Blakely and the moors beyond. Bands playing, banners flashing in the sun.
I had been determined to go to the meeting and would have followed even if my husband had refused his consent. I was dressed plainly as a countrywoman in my second best attire. My companions also were neatly dressed as the wives of working men.
We had been up since 6 a.m. Each group was led by youths marching 5 abreast. Then the band and the colours. Every 100 men had a leader.
My husband headed the Middleton contingent with a bugleman to sound his orders.
They were to offer no provocation, not to insult anyone, but rather to take insult. In keeping with the ruling of the committee, no sticks, bludgeons or weapons of any description were to be allowed or carried in our ranks.
If peace officers should come to arrest my husband or any other person, we were to offer no resistance, but suffer them to execute their office.
Our numbers began to swell as we approached Manchester. We went down Moseley Street, took the left side of the church, wheeled steadily into St. Peter's Street, and took our stations close to the hustings, still forming an unbroken line with our colours in the centre.
I obtained a good position for seeing the platform and hearing all. But more and more people pressed on me until I was almost suffocated. Every moment I began to feel worse and told some men I felt sick. They immediately made way for me and helped me out of the crowd.
The sun was hot, and as we drew near the green, we were perspiring freely. We stopped briefly at an alehouse, then moved on.
Turning to my right, I headed for some high ground on which stood a row of houses. I thought, if I could stand at the door of one of these, I could have a good view of the meeting and perhaps locate my husband again.
Uppermost in my mind was how differently I might have employed so vast a body of men.
In about half an hour, Mr. Hunt's carriage arrived. He was standing up in it with the other members of his party.
There must have been by now about 80,000 persons.
Whom Mr. Hunt eyed, I thought, with as much astonishment as satisfaction.
Good job, Mr. Hunt. You are most welcome.
A fine turnout, Mr. Johnson, I must say.
It is you who are the attraction, orator.
Not I trust, but what I represent.
It has been proposed, Mr. Hunt, that you take the chair by popular consent. This way, this way.
Mr. Hunt mounted the hustings, took off his white hat, and prepared to address the people, now hushed with expectancy.
Suddenly, a strange murmur arose towards the church. A gleam caught my eye.
I saw a party of cavalry in blue and white uniform come trotting sword in hand round the corner of a garden wall quite close to where I stood. They reined up in a line in front of a row of new houses.
Just the Blackburn contingency arriving. No, 'tis soldiers. Never fear, they're only come lest there be any disturbance.
The good folks of the house where I was said the soldiers were come to keep order, not to meddle with the people. Nonetheless, I was alarmed.
The people gave, as I understood it, a shout of goodwill. The cavalry shouted back, waving their sabres over their heads. Then, there was a sudden movement in one section. Slackening rein and spurring the steeds, the cavalry dashed forward, cutting and thrusting at the people.
They came straight at us, swinging with their sabres. I threw myself to one side and ran for cover, only to find myself thrust towards the wall of a Quaker's meeting house. Some timber lay there. Vaulting it, we tried with stones to defend ourselves.
A woman stepped forward, touching her little son. She was thrown to the ground and stunned. The child fell from her arms under the horses and was killed.
Another woman, her face all bloody, her hair streaming about her, her bonnet hanging by the string, and her apron weighted with stones, kept the cavalry at bay until she fell backwards and was near being taken, but got away, covered with severe bruises.
One of the yeomanry was unhorsed by a blow from a piece of brick, supposed to have been flung by this woman.
I'm broken, Miss! Spectacles!
Spectacles, I'll break up and leave back!
Tom, tell me, it is me! Mary!
Don't hurt me!
I'll tell my Johnny, you drunk at all!
Don't ride me down!
I'll ride you to the bloody marrow!
Thomas Ashworth, Bull's Head, Manchester, sabred and trampled. John Ashton, sabred and trampled. Thomas Buckley, sabred and stabbed.
I called to my men to break their flagstaves and secure their banners, but could not make myself heard.
Fortunately, the platform upon which Mr. Hunt and his party stood was somewhat elevated, so that he was beyond the reach of the swords which gleamed all around. Eventually, however, they were forced, or fell, from the platform, to be confronted by officers demanding their arrest.
For God's sake, forbear! The people are unarmed! They cannot protect themselves!
Stand where you are, Hunt!
What do you want, Nadine?
Chief Constable Nadine to you.
Well?
We're not here to strew flowers at your feet, I'll tell you that.
I willingly surrender myself to any civil officer who first shows me his warrant.
Here's your bloody warrant! Now move!
James Crompton, trampled on by the cavalry. William Files, 2-year-old boy, rode over by the cavalry. Mary Hayes, same. Sarah Jones, no cause given.
As I was driven away, the field was almost deserted. The hustings remained with a few broken or hewed flagstaves erect, and a torn or gashed banner or two drooping. While over the field were strewed caps, bonnets, and so on, trampled, torn, and bloody. Among them, my hopes.
I picked up a cap of liberty. One of the cavalry rode at me and demanded it. I refused. Whereupon, he came after me. I had reached the end of Mount Street when he lunged at me with his saber, almost severing my arm.
Eventually, the yeomanry dismounted. Some easing their horses' girths, others adjusting their accoutrements, some wiping their sabers. Chopped limbs could be seen. Whole mounds of people lay where they had fallen, some groaning, others with staring eyes, gasping for breath. Others would never breathe more.
John Lees, Oldham. Injuries too numerous to list. Arthur O'Neill, Pigeon Street, Manchester, inwardly crushed. Martha Partington, thrown into a cellar and killed on the spot.
I feared my husband must have been killed and said I had to go home. When the people asked where I was from, I said Middleton, but did not mention my husband's name lest, on account of his being one of the leaders, I should be given up and put in prison.
John Rhodes, sundry injuries. Joseph Ashworth, shot. William Bradshaw, Lily Hill near Bury, no cause given. William Dawson, Saddleworth, killed on the spot. Edmund Dawson, of wounds in the Royal Infirmary.
A special constable civilly took my arm and led me over the now deserted field. He left me at Shrewd Hill, where one of our people told me my husband was indeed killed. Afterwards, I heard he was in the infirmary, then that he was safe and sound. Soon after which, I had the pleasure of rejoining him, for which mercy I sincerely return thanks to God.
15 are confirmed dead. The numbers of the injured, as given by the Metropolitan Relief Committee, come to 420, including Margaret Goodwin, 8 Bury Street, trampled on by horses, cut at by Shelmerdine, a widow with one child, much distressed. Mary Jervis, 17 Longworth Street, trampled on and crushed dreadfully. The calf of the leg has been taken off. In consequence, the doctor's bill is 4 guineas. William Lee, 23 Queen Street, Deansgate, a young boy, severely cut on the head. His mother, a poor woman with 4 children, living in a cellar whose husband does not live with her.
Taxation too great to be born, and pray for relief from night to morn, who in vain petition in every form, who peaceably meeting to Castle Reform were sabred by yeomanry cavalry who were backed by the public informer who would put down the thing that in spite of new acts and attempts to restrain it by soldiers of tax will poison the vermin that plundered the wealth that lay in the house that Jack built. Safe mouth!
It is the people's blood that you've spilt. The people's voices you've tried to stifle with no justification other than your arrogance for comfort and power. Nadine says his special constables could not on their own have executed the warrant, so he was given military force to hack down an unarmed crowd. Defenseless women and children. And whose was the warrant? Who authorized it but you? It was on your instruction that armed cavalry should cut down innocent women and children. I could still hear their screams. I cannot bear it. They're on my conscience as much as yours till you were called to account. I take it on myself, for no one else will, to make your life provide a requiem to the souls of those murdered innocents. Sit mouth. I challenge you to a duel, man to man. Pistols are what you will. I throw the gauntlet at your feet on behalf of those innocents hewn down at St. Peter's Field. Your life or mine. No middle way. Answer me. Answer me, damn you. For I am your avenging angel.
I have been commanded by His Royal Highness to express the great satisfaction derived from the magistrate's prompt and efficient measures for the preservation of public tranquillity, and for the assistance afforded on the occasion by Major Trafford and the Salford Yeomanry Cavalry. I am equally gratified by the deliberate, spirited manner in which the magistrate subsequently discharged their arduous duty. Did they?
They will.
I do not fail to appreciate most highly the merits of the other troops employed on this service. It may be deemed... Yeah, I like deemed.
Mm-hmm.
Deemed a matter of surprise and congratulation that the casualties were not more numerous. Casualties among
the cavalry.
Of course. Well.
There is just one other small item.
I'm extremely busy, you know.
Someone has issued you with a challenge.
A challenge? To what?
A duel.
Good God! Who?
Thistlewood.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
What am I going to do?
What would you advise?
I'd advise you to advise me to keep an eye on him.
So long as you keep me informed.
Of course, Minister.
One thing which never ceases to intrigue me is how Walpole could prefer claret to port.
Let us transport ourselves to the opposite corner of John Bull's menagerie, where Arthur Thistlewood and his wife Susan receive a visit from the lynx-eyed...
Edwards. George Edwards. That took courage, friend.
What did?
Challenging Sidmouth like that.
I believe he must be brought to book.
You're not the only one.
What?
We must join forces rather than dissipate our efforts. We need men like you.
We?
The Tricolour Committee.
Tricolour?
How did you come to choose my husband?
There are those who know him and admire what he stands for.
Are you trying to tell us that you've some plan to put down Sidmouth?
Our plan is to set up a provisional government.
What?
If there's no cabinet, we will need a provisional government until the rotten boroughs can be taken care of and proper elections held. Then there will be a government that is truly of the people.
My husband's main quarrel is with Sidmouth.
Sidmouth is only one of the Hydra's heads.
Right. We've been defensive long enough.
What are your committee's principles?
Listen. The three main questions regarding government are, 1, to what authority is it for the good of the people that they should be subject? 2, how are they to be induced to obey that authority?
We know all that.
And 3, by what means, and this is what concerns us most closely, by what means are the abuses of this authority to be checked?
How do you propose to check them?
I thought I'd made that clear. By assassinating the members of the cabinet.
What?
The entire cabinet?
Theirs is a communal guilt.
I've waited a long time to meet somebody like you. I've put up with so many groups of so-called reformers whose zeal turns out to be hot air. Doesn't he mirror our own very thoughts?
And those of Thomas Paine. If only he could have lived to see our plans bear fruit. Did you know Cobbett has brought Paine's bones back from America for proper burial?
I met Paine in prison in Paris. After Robespierre's death. I liked him, too. I lost my first wife through illness.
I went to prison for selling copies of his book, and I'd gladly do so again for putting its tenets into practice. In due course, we will allocate funds from the Treasury to build him a mausoleum.
All we wait for is a moment to strike.
Can you justify your confidence, Mr. Edwards?
First, it is based on a troop of men whose aim is as precious as their life's blood. Second, ours is a common cause. With the lives not only of individuals, but the populace as a whole at stake.
You believe you will succeed?
With men like your husband, how can we fail? After all, the right is on our side. It's inevitable there must be stupendous retribution for those chopped down at St. Peter's Field. Who better to be their avenging angel?
We'll steep our hands in their blood. Stick mouth. I'll stick like a pig. Set his head on a pole for all England to see.
But the entire cabinet...
We must use violent means. Or be ourselves put down.
Are we to totally disregard human life?
It mustn't Castle Rare disregard it. Look at all the hangings in the past month.
The pity is there aren't more in a cabinet to do away with. Exact greater revenge.
You're with us?
I'd be with you for a square meal.
Here are the names of our group.
Brunt, Ames, Richard Tidd.
With their addresses and current meeting places.
There are not many here.
These are the hardcore. Others will provide artillery and other support.
Who finances them?
There are factions here and abroad who would welcome a downfall of our government.
You also need sources of information so that you know in advance where those you intend to destroy are going to be at one time.
Naturally.
Unless, of course, you plan to blow up the Commons.
That's been attempted.
Exactly.
Mrs. Thistle would have no fear. Everything will be planned and carried through with the skill and care of a military operation. Not surprisingly, considering a number of our support are themselves ex-soldiers. Ings here on the list was formerly in the Blues.
Because what you need, above all, is discipline.
Rest assured there'll be that. If I had to see to it myself.
If the devil himself were to come out of that fire after having killed all the ministers, I swear I'd shake his hand.
Brunt will be the intermediary from now on. Memorise these names, and then destroy the paper. Soon the tree of liberty will be planted in hell. And the bloody butchers of Manchester be the fruit on it.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
Isn't this what we've both been looking for so long? Isn't it a chance that we must leap at?
How do you know you can trust this, Edwards?
Only one way to find out.
Perhaps that's what he wants.
Sidmouth is among those he intends to make pay. That's good enough for me.
Reform, reform, the swinish rabble cry. Meaning, of course, rebellion, blood and riot. Audacious rascals. You, my lords, and I... notice their duty to be starved in quiet.
Our first priority is to turn the tide of public opinion against these extremists.
To let them come in with the tide, and then make sure that when it goes out, they are left high and dry like so much jetsam.
So that when we go to the country, we vastly increase our majority in the House.
The flowers are very colourful.
You appreciate how the King's death put a new complexion on things.
But I think I prefer these.
It's imperative we go to the country within 6 months, under the Constitution.
Never fear, the election shall be held, and your party win it.
Well, this afternoon, honourable members were seeking, nay, demanding, assurances that adequate safeguards be set up and protection provided for individual members of the House, and for their property, in the face of the current wave of violence.
You could no longer walk the street at night. Soon Piccadilly itself will not be safe in broad daylight. The forces of the law have been weakened, in my opinion, by the court sentencing batches of the rioters to death only to reprieve them. And also by an insufficiency of the means, either in law or force, to curb the spirit of revolt. I could only assure the House that surveillance is maintained night and day to the best of our resources. And to those who saw this as a curtailment of individual or civil liberty, I said only, of these radicals, is there any one of them with whom you would trust yourself in the dark?
The Azaleas should be out soon.
If only we could impress upon these agitators that the present distress of the country arises from unavoidable circumstances.
There is a surer way of wooing back those who are slipping towards the radical fold.
Well, I'm delighted to hear it.
We must persuade someone, some group, to attempt something so ludicrous, so grotesque, that the nation as a whole accepts the need for them to be put down.
And at the same time, stampede moderate opinion in our favour. Have you any idea how this could be contrived?
It did strike me, Minister, that we might arrange a cabinet dinner, a non-existent cabinet dinner.
You mean a dinner at which there's no food?
On the contrary, one at which there is no cabinet.
You gentlemen and tradesmen that ride about at will, look down on these poor people, it's enough to make you thrill. Look down on these poor people as you ride up and down. I think there is a God above will bring your pride quite down. You tyrants of England, your race meant to be run. You may be brought unto account for what you've sorely done. You pull down on our wages, so shamefully to tell. You go into the market and say you cannot sell. And when that we do ask you when these bad times may end, you quickly give an answer when the wars are at an end. You tyrants of England, your race may to be run. You may be brought unto account for what you have sorely done. And now, me lads, for to conclude, it's time to make an end. Let's see if we can form a plan that these bad times may mend. So give us our old prizes, as we have had before, and we can live in happiness and rub off the old score. You tyrants of England, your race meant to be run. You may be brought unto account for what you have sorely done.
On one corner of Cato Street in the borough of Marylebone is the Horse and Groom Tavern. On the other, above a disused stables, we discover Arthur Thistlewood in the company of James Ings, butcher of Portsmouth, Richard Tidd, shoemaker and failed pamphleteer, and John Brunt, ex-soldier and manufacturer of explosive devices.
We should have taken advantage of the time all the lifeguards and officers were with the other troops at Windsor for the King's funeral.
There was no assurance then that our cannon were secure.
That was when we ought to have struck.
And we didn't have Edwards with his men.
Or Thistlewood, for that matter.
Where is Edwards? He should be here.
Oh, instead of talking about lost opportunities, we should be setting our minds on what we're going to do. And how long we can afford to wait.
I can't stand the thought of the Prince Regent wearing a crown.
We're all one on that. Yeah. More to the point, the people are so poor and hungry, if we don't get on with it, they'll all starve. Look at ourselves. We can scarcely afford tallow for a light.
My wife is at me for food for the children. She says if I don't start stealing again, she will.
Ah, yes, then you end up in prison. That won't do our cause no good.
We've been long enough at this, Brunt. Any longer, we shall be too weak to carry out our own plans.
Well, why pick on me as if it was my fault?
But what's
the use arguing amongst ourselves like this?
Who's bloody arguing? Apart from anything else, what we do hinges on it being dark. Every week we waste the nights are getting lighter, cutting down the likelihood of escape.
And increasing the chances of our arms being discovered.
Quiet.
Edwards, you're late.
Look at it. What is it?
Let me see.
Here, read it out.
Hold a candle steady.
Our time's come. There's to be a dinner at the full cabinet at the Earl of Araby's house in Grosvenor Square.
When?
Day after tomorrow.
It could be a trick.
How can it be? It's here, in black and white.
I'll be damned if I don't almost believe her to be a god after all.
Now our prayer is answered.
Brothers, we must tread warily. First, we have to set a watch on the Earl of Araby's house to see there isn't a trap.
I'll do that.
Right, Edwards. In the meantime, we'll get the grand plan of the house itself to work out how to tackle the job. How many men will we have here?
Given the size of the stables and the way things are laid out, I'd say 18 or 19, not counting ourselves.
Is that all?
These are only the advance party.
Who's backing us up?
Count on me for 40 or 50.
Their job will be to take the cannon from Gray's Inn Lane.
Right.
Then provide arms later for seizing the tower. Kid, your responsibility beforehand to contact all making the fuses of our hand grenades and illumination balls.
Mm-hmm. I can bring rope yarn.
Good.
Remember, approach Cato Street in pairs. Don't attract attention.
Right. We'd best break up. There's plenty to do between now and then.
We need a new countersign.
Yes. Let's make it B-U-T-T-O-N.
Right. B-U-T?
T-O-N.
You'd best get some sleep.
Why?
You need it.
I'm the best judge of that. What's up now?
Nothing.
Why must you?
I was thinking, that's all. The sheer enormity of what we're taking on.
You can't stomach it.
I didn't say that.
You're a woman, after all.
I have a stronger stomach as you any day.
Well, what's wrong, then? For years you've been complaining about Hunt and Watson weren't extreme enough. Now you're changing your tune.
No. Simply facing up to the reality. The approach of actual bloodshed. Like a thundercloud hanging over us.
When we first met, before you married me, you knew I caused bloodshed.
In the army, during a war.
This is a war. To the death. Except that we recognize our allies not by scarlet tunics, but by their consciences. And the willingness to put their intentions into practice. And performing a duty to my country as much as any soldier.
Don't shout at me.
Well, why not?
I'm frightened.
Of me?
For you. The thought of anything going wrong.
Oh, what could go wrong?
Anything happening to you.
You should be strengthening me, not sapping me.
Is it not strengthening to know I need you? To know my feelings towards you?
She's no time for feelings. You must talk, you talk practicalities. Oh,
when I talk practicalities, you never listen.
I'm listening now.
Are you sure you can carry out this insurrection? That you have enough support?
You forget it's not only us. The poor of Spitalfields are destitute, ravening for food. And there are others, the breadth of this city, who haven't been able to find work for a 12-month. Who lie at home all day, their garments rotting on their backs. When we show our hand, they'll rise in their thousands.
I wish I could be so sure.
How can you say that?
I hope no one lets you down.
If one of us does, we'll kill him on the spot without a second's hesitation.
I was afraid of your saying that.
Why?
Because violence breeds violence.
Not necessarily.
Remember, Edward said the crimes of the present government, any government, were self-perpetuating, even though individual members were voted out.
I said that.
Isn't it all the more likely when the government and constitution are overthrown by force?
You don't understand. We're putting an end to violence.
Look at France, during the terror.
This is not France.
Still fear, when it's all over, there may be only the whirlwind to reap.
Would you rather lie mouldering from lack of food? Is that what you want?
I'm not saying that. I don't know what sort of a person this might turn you into. What has it done to you already?
We will succeed. Damn you!
But at what cost?
I propose a formal meeting.
Who's in the chair?
Thistlewood.
Brothers, this is our plan. I propose going to the door with a note to Earl Harrowby. When the door's opened, we'll rush in directly, seize the servants, present a pistol to them, and threaten them with death if they offer the least resistance. This done, a party will take command of the stairs. One man will have firearms and be protected by another holding a grenade. A couple of men will also take the head of the stairs leading to the lower part of the house, with grenades to drop in any disturbance. All this done with the object of securing the house. Those men who were to commit the assassination are to rush in on a signal directly after.
I'll enter the room first. I'll go in with a brace of pistols, a cutlass and knife in my pocket. And after the two swordsmen have dispatched them, I'll cut every head off that's in the room. And Lord Castlereagh's head and Lord Sidmouth's I'll bring away in a bag. As soon as I get into the room, I'll say, "Well, my lords, I have as good men here as the Manchester Yeomanry Cavalry. Enter, citizens, and do your duty."
May I have the pleasure of accompanying him?
Certainly, Brunt. You're a good swordsman?
I've not been in the position of using one for some time, but I can defend myself. And in this instance, I will acquit myself well, I assure you.
Good.
Mr. Chairman, I have a proposition to make.
Well?
I propose that as many of the ministers as we can assassinate on Wednesday night be done in by men divided into separate lots. And out of each lot, one man shall be drawn who shall have the duty of assassinating one particular minister. Whatever man the lot fall upon, if he attempts the deed and fails, I swear by all that is good, he shall be run through on the spot.
That is surely a bit severe. Make it, if he fails through cowardice of any kind, not by ill luck or judgment. He cannot help that.
We can afford no ill luck or misjudgment. We're acting for the common good.
I could do with a drop to drink. Put me in proper spirits.
A man drunk runs himself into the hands of his enemies. We cannot afford that.
Have we ascertained their numbers?
Lord Harrowby has 14 at most.
Well, we have Edward's troop in support. He's checking the lookout.
Good.
One point, Mr. Chairman. There will likely be a crowd round the door when we have done. How are we to make good our escape?
Remember, we are the smallest contingent. Edwards will back us up.
If you're afraid for your life, we'll go away without you.
He's left it too late. He comes into the house with us, even if we have to blow it up with him inside it.
Oh, Jesus.
B-U-T-T-O-N. I command you, in the king's name.
We've been tried!
Your documents, Mr. Edwards. They're in the name of Parker.
Parker?
Otherwise, you might have trouble at the customs.
Have you nothing else for me?
Of course. How stupid. Here you are.
Is this coin of the realm?
Gold coin of the realm.
Couldn't be better.
We have Thistlewood on a double charge. Murder as well as high treason. He was foolish enough to shoot one of his arresting officers. You will be out of England by this time tomorrow. Should your name crop up at the trial, it will appear you are merely a figment of Thistlewood's diseased imagination. All that remains, Mr. Parker, is to wish you bon voyage.
What I've been obliged to sit through amounts to a mistrial. I do not deny the barefaced manner in which I was plundered by my Lord Sidmouth, even to the extent of sentence to jail. All the same, I deny personal motives for attacking him. I was most deeply moved by the poverty and misery of my fellows, especially by their massacre at St. Peter's Field, whereat, in tears, I resolved the lives of the instigators should be the requiem to the souls of the murdered innocents. What I say is the truth. To the Attorney and Solicitor General, I cannot impute the clearest motives. Their object seems to me to have been rather to obtain a verdict against me than a full and fair exposition of the whole affair. If their object was justice alone, why not bring forward the government spy, Edwards, as a witness, if not an accomplice? But no. They know that by keeping Edwards in the background, my proofs of his being a hired spy, the suggester and prompter, must, according to the rules of court, also be excluded. As things are, I consider myself sold as a bullock driven into Smithfield Market to be murdered. Your hands will reek with my blood, as they already do with the blood of the poor of England, whose claims you so constantly ignore, and whose persons you abuse. You are not fit to govern this land, whose main concern is to grind the bones of the weak. It is no longer representation that's required, but total overthrow of the Constitution. I've said it from the start. The principles of the French Revolution ought to be applied against our tyrannical leaders of government and all that sustain them in power. I am led to the slaughter, yet glory in the turbulence ahead, in your overthrow and imminent downfall, for the only way is rebellion and assassination. It is bound to come to these shores, for you've brought it on yourselves. Castlereagh and Sidmouth, those bloody butchers will have their throats cut and the people's flag be raised high over their stinking carcass. Church and crown will crumble till the last prince is strangled by the guts of the last priest, and the glorious dawn comes. My greatest grief is that I shall not see it. But be assured, it will come, because it must.
London Gazette Extraordinary, Saturday, 29th of April, 1820. It was this afternoon the painful duty of the Governor of Newgate to communicate to Arthur Thistlewood that the Recorder's warrant had been issued for his execution on the morning of Monday 1st. Informed of this decision, the prisoner's sole comment was, "The sooner I go, sir, the better. My wish is to die as soon as possible."
Dear wife, my situation at this time is so dreadful that I can scarce express it. The thought of dying an ignominious death, and of having my body cut and mangled, is an awful and horrible idea, but bears no comparison with the pangs I endure on your account. You will be left to the mercy I now realize of an unfeeling world, destitute of friends and sunk in poverty. I only hope you may find protection. Hard is my lot and bitter my portion, but the hour is approaching that will terminate my earthly sufferings. Farewell, dear unfortunate wife. Farewell.
Outside Newgate Jail. Early comers having arrived at 4 a.m. Every vantage point occupied. A party of infantry in readiness. Two troops of horse guards at each end of the Old Bailey. Soon after 7, the executioner arrives and places the steps by which he is to ascend to tie the condemned sufferer to the beam. Two heaps of sawdust provided and sprinkled over the boards as butchers do. The coffin laid, brushed out, and lined with more sawdust to prevent the blood seeping through. The rope in readiness, the noose tied and tested. Then the miscreant himself appears. The executioner knocks off his irons, and offers in succession religious consolation and alcoholic fortification, both of which Mr. Thistlewood refused. He held an orange in his hand and surveyed the crowd quietly. Then he mounted the scaffold and was entreated to give up his thoughts to the change he was about to undergo, his time in this life being very short, to devote it to repentance and prayer to that being who would not desert him at the moment of fatal separation. Sucking on his orange, Mr. Thistlewood replied,
"No, no, I require no earthly help on that subject. I have but a few minutes to live, and I hope the world will be convinced that I have been sincere, and that I die a friend to liberty."
Conducted to the fatal tree, his forfeit life he paid. But he was cut down presently, and on a scaffold laid. Then with a knife his head was cut from off his body quite, and streams of blood came gushing out. Most shocking was the sight. Oh, sad and dreadful was to see his mangled body lie. Poor Thistlewood, he'll mourn no more at his sad destiny. Oh, do not wish that cruel end of pain and wretchedness on anyone, but sympathize and pity their distress.
It all went extremely smoothly, I seem to remember. What did you say became of his wife?
She headed north.
North?
Manchester. Or, Newcastle, was it?
Nice shot.
I sometimes wonder, mind you, if I don't prefer Thistlewood's type to such as Hunt and Bamford.
Well, they're all in the same boat, so far as I can see, these radicals.
You'd call Thistlewood a radical?
Wouldn't you?
Nor any of his crew. Because theirs was no reforming, but a wholly destructive zeal.
And the business of Cato Street?
Proved what I always asserted. If they were stimulated only by hunger and distress upon the animal passions, they were not true reformers, but bubbles thrown up by the fermentation of society.
Oh. I see there's a new edition of Frankenstein just out. I remember starting to read it at about that time. Turns out it wasn't by young Shelley after all.
Mm-hmm.
Written by his wife, Mary.
Godwin's daughter.
That's right.
Hmm.
You read it, have you? What did you make of the ending, eh?
Oh, that was some time ago, I'm afraid.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. How the monster heads towards the North Pole.
Ah, yes.
In order to build a funeral pyre and destroy itself.
And did it?
Destroy itself? It's funny. There's no way of knowing.
Thistlewood, he was never understood. All he wanted was a belly full of bread. Now he's gone and lost his head.
his mighty thunder, for the guilty code. He's walking down along the Primrose Road. There's a little space like black of goose, cause he went and stuck it in a hangman's noose. He became famous as he knew he would, when they chopped the head of Thistlewood. Thistle, thistle, thistlewood, thistle, thistle, thistlewood, that's the end of Thistlewood.
And in Thistlewood by Stuart Conn, Ian Hogg played Arthur Thistlewood, John Hollis, John Bull, Russell Dixon, the sea captain, and George Edwards, Peter Wheeler, Orator Hunt, and James Ings, James Tomlinson, Samuel Bamford, and Richard Tidd, Daphne Oxenford, Mrs. Bamford, Judith Barker, Susan, Geoffrey Banks, Viscount Sidmouth, John Robbins, Secretary Taylor, and Brian Miller, Dr. Watson, and John Brunt. The musical director was Adrian Secchi, and the producer was Robert Cooper.